Go ahead, Nita.
Okay. I got blue.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of our Joint Committee on Transportation, Modernization, and Preservation. Thank you very much. This February 20th, 2017. We are entering a new phase of our process tonight. We will have our first work group report out, which will be Representative Bentz talking about preservation, modernization, and seismic. I just wanted to go through briefly what the schedule looks like for the next few meetings. On Wednesday, March 22nd, we will have report outs from Senator Byers' work group and on transit and safety and my work group on multimodal. On Monday, the 27th, we will have a report out from Senator Boquist's work group on congestion relief. And then tentatively on the 29th, a joint committee discussion on revenue. We reserve the right to call an audible if we need to. We're going to be a little bit flexible about the weeks at the meetings after that. But I believe we will also be looking at April 3rd for the accountability work group report out. So that's where we are for the next couple of weeks. This evening, I'd like to welcome Representative Bentz, Vice Chair Bentz, who's going to talk to us about preservation and maintenance. Representative Bentz has asked that we go ahead and ask questions along the way rather than hold them to the end. So if you have questions, we'll go ahead and take those as we go. Senator Johnson.
I would just respectfully ask, Madam Chair, that we have our professional staff shoot out a calendar that memorializes this and includes the accountability meetings. For some of us that are in a couple of places, these dates are bouncing around so hard, it would be nice to have them all in one place.
Thank you, Senator. Staff? And on that note, the man of the hour and a half, Representative Bentz.
Madam Co-Chair, for the record, Cliff Bentz, State Representative of District 60, and I would like to have Paul, Mather, and Victor come up if they could to join me, and then let's start with this. Just the first.
Would you like the lights lowered a little
yes,
bit?
Yes, please. That would be great. And just a few preliminary remarks. It's my privilege to present the work of the Committee on Maintenance, Preservation, and Seismic. A couple of things. I wanted to make sure this is kind of a scattered approach to this process as compared to previous efforts. And I don't know exactly when I should mention, but I'm going to mention right now the importance of the marketing piece.
Move your mic over a little closer.
The marketing piece. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
The marketing piece and the all of the stuff that we do trying to make sure this package actually passes. And I know folks are working on this, and I just would suggest that if you haven't been sharing with your local communities, I sure hope you start to do so. And make sure as we go along, folks in across the state of Oregon are aware of what we're doing. I was reminded when I was talking to a number of other people back home just what a heavy lift a gas tax is, and how important it is to make sure that we appropriately justify what we're asking of the people of Oregon. So and it's really something. What you're going to see tonight is complex. There's some really big numbers. It's kind of boring. I hope you don't nod off. I'll go very quickly. If you don't ask questions, I'll go even more quickly. And then if you do have questions, I have two expert people up here to actually answer them. So here we go. Let's get started. Let's see. I'll make sure we're – that's not the right one.
You're there.
All right, so which one of these do we click on to make us go to the next one? Oh, right there.
Up and down.
Okay, so work group number one was is Senator Winter, Senator Girard, Rep. Lively, and Rep. Bentz. I want to thank Victor and Patrick, Tim and Paul for their incredible patience, some very to-the-point discussions. So what will our future be? This one looks suspicious like some roads in Tualatin, and then this one, which is a brand-new road out in my district. So observations of bridges are old. Bringing them up to standards is going to be in the billions. We'll go to that in a minute or two. Our cities and counties are converting or moving paved roads back to gravel. That's happening in my district. The state system is in better condition, but the challenges are easily within sight. And then our seismic investment is a joke. And sadly, it may be likely to stay that way because I think the amount of money it's going to take is amazing in scope. So roads essential. There's Oregon. There's a roads. Bridges are indispensable. Some quick shots of bridges. And the real problem is our bridges are really old. So you can see that pre-1950, purple, 50 through 74, orange, and of course blue, 75 through 99. But you look at that orange slice, that is really getting up there. So our roads are also failing. This is all too common a sight. Bridges, pavement, more bridges, more pavement. And this was, what was this again, Paul? What are we looking at?
Actually, they're doing a repair underneath the bridge in Prineville, yeah. This is the, yeah.
Okay. Feel free to keep on talking, Paul. Never mind, we're moving on. What bridge is this? I wanted to have a car dangling through this bridge because that's the bridge. And so it would have been so much more effective in suggesting to folks in the Portland area that it may be time to do something to repair that particular structure. This is the, what is this, 99 East? Is that right? And I hope I'm not driving over that anytime soon. So some definitions as we go into this. Pardon me.
Where was that last one?
It's in your district.
99 East is in Portland.
Where is it?
It's in Oregon City.
Yeah, I drive over it all the time.
That's the one you hit last week, wasn't it?
So it's the one that's sliding into the river right now.
So some definitions as we go through the rest of this presentation. Our pavement condition classifications are very good, good, fair, poor, and very poor. The targeted condition is what? Paul, what are we shooting for?
I've seen it.
What would we like, or Victor, whichever one of you rather?
Just for the record, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. So typically what we want to see is our assets, whether it's bridges or pavements, kind of rotate between that very good, good, fair, then back up to good, fair. That's the most economical way to maintain your system. You don't want it to fall into the poor or very poor, then it's very costly to go back higher.
So is that where you, Paul, is at what point do you have to take it out and start all over again? Is that poor?
Mr. Chair, when it gets down, yeah, the poor and for sure in the very poor. Then you're rebuilding the road base, you're rebuilding the bridge, then it's to a point where it's got to be totally rebuilt.
So that slide that Representative Bentz at the start of the pavement where it was alligatored?
Yeah, we're likely rebuilding that entire roadway, taking it down.
When you see that, it means you got to tear the road out and right. Start over.
That's correct.
Senator Johnson, did you have a question?
No.
Okay, so there are descriptions. Here are some pictures. Very good. I think you all saw one of those roads in my district, sadly. That was the only good road we had. It was a horrible choice of highway to take you on. This is good. Of course, fair, which there's your alligator issues. And poor, which we just saw. Very poor, which you can see there. So preservation, of course, to be distinguished from maintenance, and you can see that preservation, that we'll talk about here in a few minutes, is paving, striping, reconstruction, designed to add to the useful life of our existing assets. And maintenance is everything we do on the road. Can you elaborate on that just a bit? Because the maintenance number is really big. So, Paul?
Yeah, this is all the work that we do just to keep the system operating. It includes the operation costs, such as responding to landslides or responding to crashes on the roadway. Obviously, winter maintenance, filling potholes, cleaning ditches, signs, illumination, traffic signals, all those things.
As compared to modernization, which is?
Then we're expanding the system in some way, whether expanding lanes or expanding capacity in some way of the system.
Which was not part of our work group. So seismic, of course, everybody knows what that is. So disinvestment, just going back.
Not everybody knows what that is. The question between seismic as it relates to the big one and just geological movements, Paul knows well that I've got a segment of road that's down on the roadbed all the time on Highway 30 out by Klatskanai. Are you differentiating these at all? That we have geographically active dirt in places versus a big one?
It's called the coast.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, we do distinguish between those. When we look at the seismic one, we're looking for those major landslides that are going to be triggered that are going to take the roadway completely out. If we're going to have rocks on the road, if we're going to have something that we can clean up in a couple day or two, we're not worried about those. What we're worried about is not having a roadway at all that we have anything to work with.
Okay, thank you.
But Mr. Mather, south of Port Orford, we have a section that falls off on occasion. How would that be considered in this definition? Because the road falls away.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what would likely happen, especially on the coast and those historical landslides with a 9.0 earthquake, we would see all those move dramatically and we wouldn't have a roadway left.
And I think we're going to get to Rock Falls soon. So disinvestment, this is a word I really don't care for, but it simply means we haven't been keeping up. And that's what this next slide says. We failed to keep up the investment needed to keep all of our assets in a fair condition, thus disinvestment. And then although we've raised some of fees over the past few years, 24 years, we've had one gas tax increase, and that was in 2009, since 1993. Now, gas taxes have not kept up with inflation. And by the way, everyone will have a copy of this, so that's why I'll go through it this quickly. This is the gas tax history. And you can see going down, it's pretty amazing. If you look at 1981, 8 cents, 84, 9 cents, 85, 10 cents, 86, 11 cents.
Wow.
Pretty amazing. That was the increase was increasing by 2 and then by 3 and then by 1 and then by 2 and then by 2 more and so forth. And so there was a pretty consistent continual investment until roughly 1993. And then 24 years go by and one increase. But that's not to say there wasn't more money, because of course if you look at the revenue over those same years at the bottom of the slide, you'll see we start with 71 and up to 2015. You can see that there have been increases in fuel tax receipts, weight mile taxes, and registration. And those numbers add up to these, and I'm not sure how well you'll be able to see them.
Maybe not at all.
But if you look at the last 3 years, you'll see that we had an increase of growth of 3.6% in 15-16, 3.4% in 14-15, and 3% in 13-14. We go clear back to 08-09, where we had a drop of 7%. So we have been increasing in that on that side of the ledger. Just go back and show you again. Although no increase in the gas tax, there has been an increase in overall income. And so the value of investing now, this is a slide my assistant back in Ontario put together. And as you can see, the space of time you generally have between these conditions of payment. And what we're going to do after we go from this slide is go into the condition of the roads in the three jurisdictions, state, county, and city. And once again, you can see you don't want to wait until very poor, because it's going to cost you $15 to get back to start. What was it between poor and fair, or fair and good? It cost a fraction of that amount.
Correct.
Perhaps a third. So this also shows you if you preserve your roads, it's the green line. If you don't preserve your roads, it's the pink line. So you save just about half if we invest in a timely fashion. I've shown this slide, this particular slide, across my district for the past 6 or 7 years. It takes a few minutes to sort out, but once people understand it, they're pretty excited about keeping their roads in. So what are we spending now? There's no reason to ask for more if we don't know what we're spending right now. But before we look at what each jurisdiction spends, how do we know that what we're spending is being spent wisely? So I thought I could sit up in my little office and figure that out. I was wrong. There's billions and billions and billions. So the key is, who do you look to answer the accountability question? Because you can't figure it out on your own. I tried. And so for state spending, the accountability framework is the Ways and Means process, OTC, what we do here, the Secretary of State audits, people getting mad and yelling, some federal oversight, and the press, of course. So on that list, I would ask you, when we get to that budget right there, the infamous bubble chart, who are you going to ask whether the amounts being spent there, because they're really big numbers, who are you going to ask if everything that's being spent is being spent wisely? You can ask ODOT, but they might be slightly biased.
No, you guys aren't biased.
But the trick is, who can you ask? And I would suggest that's one of the things I think the Accountability Committee is looking at right now. So there's the current budget of ODOT.
You Senator can see Johnson.
Excuse me, Representative Vance.
Yeah. One other one is the collision of the wise spending and the politics, because there are some subject matter on there that are heavily subsidized, and the politics make it impossible to change that. And is all I'm making is the observation that it isn't always just the actual numbers. It's the collision with people's perception of what they're getting and their aspirational desire to have it be more. I'm thinking about certain types of transportation that will always require a subsidy, and the question is how much subsidy, and are Oregonians aware of the fact of the depth of the subsidy for some of the modes?
Example?
The train. And I know I'm sitting very close to the chair of the committee and an advocate of the train, but that comes to my mind.
Chair, well, I would just suggest you call out as many of those as you can, and we'll certainly take them. We should be taking them into account as we decide whether or not we're going to ask the people of Oregon for more money, because as we go through this open process, I think that's going to be an important thing.
I think we need to be careful not to make a value judgment. Transit will always need a subsidy, and particularly in rural places that are desperate to have that connectivity. It's something that goes into the education matrix of this, but especially in places where the expenditures are more obvious. I'm thinking small communities with local transit districts versus a TriMet or a Lane County or a Chariots. So explaining to folks that some of these modes are not going to be self-sustaining, some of them get more lift from the federal government, is all part of a long-term education process.
Madam Chair, if I may, of course, we'll hear about transit in, I guess, day after tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But to your point of how we better convince the people of Oregon that we're spending their money wisely and that the amount that they're giving currently is inadequate, then it seems to me we better be in a position to recognize those kinds of subsidies and explain them appropriately and justify them appropriately.
You're making my point.
Right. That's... Thank you. Okay, so this is ODOT's debt profile. We looked at this because we were, of course, wondering at what point we would start to see some of the money we're currently spending on debt come back. And this was part of our going through the bubble chart and noting that the debt service currently is $563 million a biennium. And so we wanted to know when that $500 million per biennium was going to come back. And as you can see, we've got to wait. It's going to be 2035 before we start seeing a lot of that turn back. But again, it's a 20-year plan, so that's within shouting distance. This shows you the numbers of the debt and the times that it runs out. You can look in the left-hand column and see the years that we start paying the already existing debt off. Complicated stuff. Because of the different folks in some or entities that are responsible. So tools for county accountability. This was pretty interesting. We saw the local road and street questionnaire, which they must file each year. And then, of course, the county budget process. And then, of course, statutes that require you to spend stuff on roads. Whether this needs more attention or not, again, we'll turn to the Accountability Committee and perhaps OTC and ask. Current county's budgets, this is what each county is currently getting. The question is going to be, is it being well spent? I know in my five counties, the answer is yes. And how can I tell? Because I've gone in and asked. And we've gone through over and over and over again county budgets, and things are shrinking and extraordinarily difficult. They're hugely supportive of a transportation package. This is where the county's fiscal year 16 money came from. And then we go to the city accountability committee. We look to tell us if they're doing their job right and spending what they currently have. And again, we looked at the local road and street questionnaire. then it should be city budget process and then the same statute. So the current city's budget is $351 million. I was unable to get the, because there's how many cities?
240-something.
241. Yeah. We were not able to get that number. We did get it too late to get it into the PowerPoint. I actually have it here with me. So the amount currently being spent for maintenance, preservation, and seismic by the state, county, and city. And you can see that the state is currently spending $85 million on pavement, on maintenance, $200 million, and bridges, $85, seismic, $33, colors, $15. And the counties, the numbers are called out also. So again, what's happening is, why isn't this enough? And then what we would do is look at the condition of our roads to determine, what we're currently spending isn't doing the job if we're just to look at the condition of our roads. So as you can see, as we were going through this process, we were saying to ourselves, okay, we're gonna look at the conditions of the road, but we were also saying, okay, let's look at how much money they have and ask the appropriate people if the money's being spent right. And if we got those two questions answered, then we could go to the people of Oregon and say, we need more. So this is the state, and it shows you the current 86% in fair condition or better. Paul, tell us what that means, if you would, please.
Well, it means if you look at our condition charts that we had on there, the very good, the good, the fair. So 86% of our pavements are in that category. What you notice on here, at least what I look at on here, is the amount that's in the yellow. Or if you flip the numbers over, I think for the city and the county numbers that are coming up, that 33% of our system is in fair or worse. And when you see the city and county numbers coming up, that 33% fair or worse number, I think, will be more relevant.
And our bridges at the state level.
Same thing. So here's the number we use is 20% of the
patient. Let me back up. I'm sorry. If we go back to this pie chart, and I want to use this laser thing just so I can use it here. Are we looking at something that's bad here? Should these numbers be smaller?
So the green are the fair and better.
I can't help but notice that my district is in the best shape.
I know, we pay attention to that.
That's unfortunate.
Sure.
Well, anyway, tell us, why is that bad? Why is that yellow and red bad? What should be different about it, if anything?
Well, again, where you want to maintain your system is you don't want it in that red, which is the poor, the very poor. Where we pay attention to is the amount of pavements are in that fair or about ready to fall. You really see, like a winter we just had, a lot of our pavements were in the last year of their life, and we were hoping to get them a year, and we
didn't make it.
If you've driven I-5 in the center lane between here and Portland, that's a perfect example of one we saw coming. We moved that project up in our program to pave this summer, and we didn't quite make it. But that's an example of the kind of the peril or the kind of the tipping point where our pavements are, and our bridges are at that point too. But it's kind of a real example of what that looks like.
Coach Erbeyer.
So, Paul, when you say we didn't quite make it, what does that mean? And we all are well aware of the ruts on I-5 going north. What does that mean? Do you have to take it down and put a new lift on it completely?
Correct. You'll see us out there this summer taking all three-lane shoulders. We'll be grinding 2 inches off and putting 2 inches of pavement back on.
What's the cost to do a mile like that?
That total project cost to go from Wilsonville to Woodburn is about $15 million, I believe.
Just from Wilsonville to Woodburn?
Yeah, and that's just taking 2 inches off. That's not doing the guardrails or any of the other upgrades. The only thing we're doing is taking that 2 inches off and putting two on. A lot of it is traffic control. We have to do all that stuff at night. In fact, the work windows you'll see us working on are about 10 o'clock at night till about 5 in the morning. We have to pinch those. Just like truck traffic and others, we have to pinch our work windows down, and we don't get a full production cycle. Even out of the contractor, can't get 8 hours out there in an evening, so it just takes that much longer to get the work.
So I assume
completed.
It runs the cost up as well.
It does, yeah.
Senator Johnson.
Have you, Paul, done any cost analysis about actual lane closures and doing the work faster? I don't know whether you've studied that, but one of the things that we have heard in the course of these discussions is that it is more dangerous for personnel to be out next to active traffic versus just shutting down the road. And I can imagine the nightmare that shutting down the road would be on I-5 in that particular segment, but have you done the analysis?
How do you do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, actually we've done that. You may recall couple years ago we closed each lane of the Banfield Freeway for 3 days during the weekend, closed it completely, and repaved the entire direction, went nonstop for 36, 72 hours straight just to get that done. So we will, when we have alternative routes, we will move very aggressively, put incentives into contracts. But as you say, in this particular project, there's not really an alternative route to detour traffic onto that. During the day, we'd be able to accommodate, maybe at night. But during the day, you can't accommodate the volumes of traffic that we're seeing in many of our locations.
Thank you.
Okay, continuing. So we look at our bridges, and Paul, I think you already explained that our bridge situation is not what we would like it to be. And that is because what? You don't want your bridges to be deficient. That's the short answer. But it would be normal to have a few deficient that you'd be fixing. Have we gone past that point?
We're actually in the 2% that we have in the poor or the restricted. That's probably okay, but as you saw in the demographics of our bridges, we're seeing a whole bunch that are right on that verge of falling from, again, from in that yellow you see there, from falling from that yellow to the red. They're going to be bridges that are on the major part of our system, whether it's 97, whether it's the interstate system, key roads.
Now, the age of the bridges, you had told us in our meeting what the life of a bridge was when they were designed. What was that life?
The ones that were designed in the time period you saw up there, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the typical design life was 50 years.
And so are we reaching that right now?
Correct.
So our county roads, much, much more challenging conditions. And, of course, we have our bridge issues in the counties also. The cities, worse. And bridge is also an issue. I think everyone here has seen this chart, but it shows that our current existing program takes us up to 2018, and then as the numbers currently pencil out, we stop keeping up. And this is as to the state highways. Bridge, Paul, what's this thing say?
This is just showing you that, again, the age of the bridges on the bottom, the same point we were making on the other slide, but then it shows you in the graph in the upper right the projection based on all those bridges meeting their 50-year design life and where we see over the next couple decades our bridge conditions going.
And again, you can see the 50-year age was the 673 bridges in the 60-69 era. Okay. So what amount should we invest in these roads and bridges now? And so here are four 20-year budget scenarios created by ODOT to kind of give everybody a vision of what the future might be. The first scenario, one budget, is our current 30 cents. And each of these little boxes is a 20-year time span. So the first box, right where we are, and you can see what happens to our various things that we spend. We keep our maintenance up, but the other things all shrink. And that's just because of the impact of inflation. Is that right?
Correct.
And then our scenario two budget is to add 14 cents. The 14 cents was ODOT's number grabbed out of the air just as an illustration. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, the one and four scenarios kind of bookend, and then we picked the two and three scenarios were some points in the middle to give you a sense.
Choices?
Choices that you make in between the two bookends.
Now, each one of those choices, other than the 30 cents, has factored into it a 1.5 cent indexing feature per year. Is that
correct.
Right?
That's correct.
So that's why it remains flat as opposed to diminishing over the 20-year period. So let's go through each one. There's scenario one, and using this, you can kind of take everybody through that chart at the bottom and kind of explain what this chart shows. This is the current situation.
So this is our base case that we have. You see on the bottom row, you see the amount we currently spend on pavements, $85 million, currently spend on bridges, $85 million. Congestion relief or enhanced or modernization, 19. So those are our current numbers that we use. What you'll see, we assumed over time enhanced actually would go away as we invest more and more into the preservation of the system.
Okay, and so the maintenance is 306, the pavement 85. This is what we're doing right now. Is that a correct statement?
Correct.
And so now show us what actually happens on the ground, again, if we do nothing.
So these would be the corridors we'd be able to, really what the model's looking at is looking at pavements and bridges. And this is the corridors from a restriction standpoint. All the red dots are restricted bridges. The green corridors are the ones that wouldn't have any restrictions on them. And we built this off of, if you remember, OT03 bridge program that we had. We built it off of those routes.
And you might point out what happens to 84.
Yeah, so 84 is not green. So you're going to have several areas that are going to have restricted bridges, and all that traffic is going to go over Mount Hood through Bend on Highway 20.
But I'll still be able to get over the mountains by going through Bend.
Right, right.
Just avoid the freeway. Okay, and this is what happens if we do nothing for the next 20 years. The correct statement?
Correct.
So let's go to 14 cents.
So same thing we have. You'll see we're spending more on pavements and bridges in this scenario, a little bit more on congestion. We actually introduced some spending for a seismic in this scenario. But you'll see even the enhanced eventually would go away as we spend more and more on bridge enhance. The maintenance would actually go up as the system deteriorates. We'd actually take some of that money just to kind of keep the patching and so forth of the system together on downstream.
And let's see, there should be a, yeah, there we go. That's scenario two.
Yeah, so it's 84, all the interstate under this scenario is able to maintain truck traffic.
And that's if we raised it 14 cents and did nothing more than that, plus the 1.5 cents each year, because if we stay even with inflation, we think. And this shows you what happens with the cities and counties under scenario number two. At 14 cents times the 28 million is 392 million divided in half. There's an assumed bond element here of 25%. That's based on the county's, the work group's kind of consensus that whatever we might do, there would be a 25% bond element. Doesn't mean it has to be there, and later in the presentation, we present that as a choice or a decision point. This is number three. Go ahead, Paul.
Similar. We just kind of move at another data point downstream here. We're spending $220 million a year on bridges, $154 on pavements, a little more on congestion relief, more on seismic. And so you'll see in the next slide what it does to your system. It gets you key connections over the coast, interstate system, more of our system. This, if you remember the OTC's investment strategy that you saw, this scenario is pretty close to that scenario.
This also shows you what they break down.
Representative Benz?
Yeah.
Representative McLean has a question.
Could I just ask one question? When you're looking at that and now you're to the best of your choices in your mind as far as getting the most work done, how much did you guys try to analyze or to test out in the model talking about what was being done at the city and the county level at the same time that this kind of work was being done at the state level?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative McLean, that's an excellent question. And one, if you look through the report, we're not able to make judgments on what happens to the city and county. We don't have the data there. So the first time we ran the model assumed the city and county system was going to be fine, and it showed not very dramatic reductions when we know that's not true. And so then we modeled it that they would see similar reductions. Obviously, you'd see a much greater reduction. You're going to get to here that kind of the punchline in this report is really the job loss and the economic loss that you're going to see to the economy in each of these scenarios. That's what we're trying to get to in the report.
Thank you. So want to go to number four?
So number four is where we maintain the system as condition is today or even better. So we kind of reach our management objectives and kind of the ideal state to give you a bookmark or a benchmark on the end of the system, and you see no restricted bridges in 20 years.
And the number there is 52 cents times 28 million, and the numbers play out. So moving on, why don't you take us through the scenarios?
Yeah. Excuse me, when you say 52 cents, is that 52 cents all at once, or is that graduated in over time?
52 cents at once and then adjusted for inflation.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll get to that. Phase in the more realistic numbers here in a minute.
Thank you.
Paul, would you take us through that?
So this is really what the model really shows is the big economic driver of the bridges when you restrict the system. And so this is just showing you the different scenarios in what the bridge condition looks like on the state system in each of the four scenarios.
And so, in scenario number one, just take us through that.
A third of our bridges are going to be restricted if we do nothing in 20 years.
And 59% will be in fair conditions.
Right. And now, the scenario two and three, it doesn't look very impressive that it's coming up. But I think the key part there is which bridges. You know, is it a bridge, Madam Chair, on the Coos River Highway, or is that a bridge on 101 or I-5? Big difference.
And here's the slide you were talking about.
Yeah, so this is, if you see the executive summary of the report, this is kind of the punchline of the report. You see the different scenarios across the top that I just went through, pavement, bridge conditions under each. But you see at the top row there, the forfeited jobs and the loss in GDP in billions for each of the four scenarios. And that's really based on the bridges. We also have documented their user costs. I mean, as we've all experienced hitting potholes just in the last few months. There is a user cost to having the system go down, and that's captured in there. But really, the big headline out of this is really the bridges when you restrict a roadway to 80,000-pound trucks and what that means to the commerce and the economic competitiveness of the state.
And I think what's most interesting about this slide is, as you look at scenario one and scenario two and scenario three, you're still falling behind. And we sought some sort of a descriptive phrase to use for this. And if you use a patient as the analogy, then in the first scenario, the patient is continuing to fail badly. In the second one, you've stopped the bleeding, perhaps, but not completely. And the third one, still failing. And finally, until when you get to four, you've actually got the patient up and running again. So several of us, we talked a lot about how much we should raise the tax. We never reached any particular agreement. Several suggested 9 to 11 cents. This is how 11 cents looks. And so let's just stare at it for a minute. It raises $308 million. And it's 3 cents less than the 14 that you took us through. So it certainly, if we were to do that, and to go clear back to scenario two, right there, that's what our future over 20 years looks like.
Right, that's a good approximation. Yep.
Yeah. And that's assuming we went with closer to 14 cents, which is 11. That's you were taking all of the 11 of the 14 cents into the roads. No bonding, but bonding could be worked into the bridges. So, in a sense, we could have it both ways there. But moving on. Okay, so how would the cities and counties use the additional revenue?
Senator Johnson has a question, yeah. Representative Mintz.
My question is that you're looking at the totality of the state, and while I am a great proponent for geographic equity, did you discuss at all phasing these investments so that you, Paul's shaking his head,
Mr. Mallory?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
Senator Johnson, phasing investments or phasing the increases? We're going to get to phasing some of the increases we're going to get to here in a few slides.
Okay, then I'll just wait.
Yeah.
Senator, if I might, to go back to scenario number two, which is the closest to the an 11-cent investment, this is based on an 11-cent plus a 1.5 inflator. And what you see has happened is they've shrunk back on taking care of. So there's been that
continuing deterioration. Right.
What you've done is you've selected the most important corridors and you've let the rest go. So there's been, you're not really spreading the money out in any way, any unplanned way. You're looking at what's most important and putting the money there and letting the rest go continue to decline. Okay, so here's, I want to look again.
Your bio has a question, Representative Manson.
On that last chart, you had the serial tube. It looked like I-5 with that scenario. The road is green, but you got an awful lot of red dots on that. I can't tell from here whether.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, those are probably overpasses.
They're the overpasses.
Yeah, those are the overpasses. Or,
so it wouldn't impede the interstate at all.
Correct. The route's green, so under this scenario, we'd get to all the interstate.
So you could go down the freeway with an 80,000-pound truck. You just couldn't go off.
You couldn't get on the freeway.
You can't get the press well.
Okay. Phased increase. We recognize that something would have to happen over the next 20 years. We don't, we've drawn these out. There was no particular thinking that went into this other than just show how it looks. The truth of it is, just because we would do something now, as this slide shows, let's say 11 cents under the hypothetical, and then 1 cent a year going forward, you'd still have to see 5-6 years out another aggressive increase, and then another 5 or 6 years out. The difficult to build in a long-term fix with a 1 cent a year increase, so we put a 2 cent a year increase, and still that barely keeps up with inflation on some numbers, and then still then we went with a 3, and again you don't get to where you probably should get, but we're getting closer. Again, there was no particular agreement among our group on this. What was suggested is if we were going to do this kind of approach with consistent increases, that we might want to delegate that responsibility to the OTC. And so that's a long discussion and perhaps one that other groups are having. So seismic, the bridges, Paul, why don't you take us through that?
So, you know, you saw the number of bridges that were built before 1970, but when we talk about seismic, what's really relevant are the bridges built before 1990. That was about the time we understood with any kind of detail the earthquake that we had off our coast and started to change our design standards. So there was even less. We got about 3/4 of our bridges in service today that were built before 1990. So those are the ones that only have a health issue, but they also have a seismic issue that needs to be addressed.
This is the number that it would cost if you did everything it took to make our bridges seismically protected and address rock falls also. Madam Chair, this is the this is the interesting slide. And Paul, I wasn't sure you had the program. You have the program broken into 5 phases, and the number of bridges you would repair and the cost of each of those repairs. But I didn't know the time of your current plan. Over what period of time were you spreading that, or you were just saying,
well,
this is how you'd go about it?
Yeah, this is how we'd go about it and order it. If you had all that money today, it would take us probably 10 years per phase just to build them.
And the number of bridges that need help, is there any debate? It's 718 total bridges.
Yeah.
In the normal course of bridge repair, how many of those are you going to get to?
Our current program, we rebuild about 3 bridges a year.
I think the number you said showed was 900 years to get it
right.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, there is, to quote Paul, it was, according to Paul, I should have said, at 11 cents with 1 cent per year increase, the bridges won't get fixed, they just won't fall apart as fast. Take us through your seismic program.
So this is real briefly what we call our seismic plus program. So the plus piece is the health of the bridges. Not only do we have a seismic problem, we have a bridge problem, and they got to be fixed together. If we had a lot of money for seismic right now, you couldn't do retrofitting of bridges without doing the repairs you need to do first. So they really got to fit together. This map just outlines the 5-phase approach that we have. You see the 4 phases on here. The 5th phase are the very, very large bridges, mostly on the coast, that we would save until the very 5th stage. The highlighted blue pieces you see on here are what's funded by our commission. With the latest FAST Act funds, our commission funded the bridge work on 97 and on 58.
And this, we had a long discussion about the approach that ODOT is using with the blue area, which is the what you would call, I guess, the most important thing when it comes to earthquakes, at least according to your model. But Senator Girod pointed out that it was designed with little care, at least in the first couple of phases, for those people located many miles away, such as in Gold Beach. You ran some numbers on that to try to put it in perspective.
So if you were going to, you know, reorder the phases and you want to do a phase that went from Brookings to Eugene, that cost would be somewhere between $750 million to $1 billion to do that phase. So it's comparable to any one of the other four or five phases you see on here.
But the point was there's choices being made with this approach. The choice is what was the blue area based on? Why the blue area and why not someplace else?
The biggest driver in that was the long-term economic effects we're going to have on our economies. We've seen disasters like Katrina and others, and this is going to be even on a bigger scale than that. You're going to have industry in the state are going to leave the state, especially those that are here for the quality of life. If we don't have ways for their workers to get to work, their goods and services to get out to the marketplace, we've got to keep them connected. And the bulk of those are in the Portland metro area, and so providing some way of north, south, east, west connection for that long-term recovery and economic stability was the emphasis for that. The 97, as you may know, in our overall approach, Redmond Airport is the initial staging area, so connecting a roadway north-south to the Redmond Airport seemed important too.
Thank you, Mr. Mather. We appreciate that, those of us who live on the coast. I think Senator Beyer had a question, but I think you may have just answered it.
Yeah.
Senator Johnson.
I guess that last map is so stark in its presentation. Mm-hmm. you're talking about getting people to work. You might as well say in the Portland metro area.
Mm-hmm.
It makes one speculate about the rest of the state just in terms of we're gone.
Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm going to get to that a little bit in our next slide when we talk about our triage approach. But yeah, there's tough choices to make, and we zeroed in on where the biggest impact we were going to have on the economy with the investment is how we came up with the scenarios.
Senator Johnson, and then Senator Beyer.
It begs the question about where we as a state are. I think it is the Oregon way that we want to spread everything out so that everybody gets a little something of everything. I'm wondering whether or not negotiations could occur to allow there to be so much focus on some of these big projects to the detriment of little ones. And I know I'm about to gore somebody's ox, but I'm thinking about being down in Nyssa and looking at the project that was there. And it's a de minimis amount of money. But I'm wondering why we're doing street bulb outs in places like Nyssa and Rainier and spending that money. Is there any mindset at all to say we've got to strengthen some of these lifelines and that needs to occur first, and maybe we suspend some of those little programs? And I know that runs, I can see the county and city people flinching and getting out a garlic and a crucifix, but when do we as Oregonians think that perhaps there is a such urgency that you pick those lifelines and to the detriment of other projects, beef them up immediately?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I those are tough choices, and I think as a state we haven't quite got to that point where we're ready to make those kind of decisions.
Senator Beyer.
Yeah, I was going to comment to Senator Johnson, since the blue, we need to keep in mind in terms of that when the big one comes, the Redmond area is going to become the center of the earth for us, and that's where all of the support services for the rest of the state is likely to come from.
No, I get that completely. Waterfront real estate in Redmond, I understand that.
Well, I don't mean that. I just mean where do you land the helicopters?
Anywhere.
Representative McLean.
Well, I wanted to expand on that because I've seen this presentation before last year in policy transportation, and we were talking about how do we help the people on the coast the best way. way, and we're going to need to get supplies in, and we're going to need to get, you know, people from the outside of the state to come in and help us with hospitals and with care and all kinds of things. So when you talk about it as economic, or I don't know what, I think you said getting people to their jobs, to me that was secondary and it wasn't complete, because your first issue, when you showed this to us the first time, was this is how we're going to make the whole state work quicker.
So, Madam Chair, Representative McLean, we took the comments that we had in committee to heart, and if Representative Benz goes to the next slide, I want to cover some of the new work we've been doing and what we call our triage strategy. So what I used to outline for you in the five stages was kind of the long-term kind of ground game of moving from one phase to another as an opportunity, very expensive, very slow process. What about getting out in front of this in those areas that are outside of Portland or outside of the valley, and can we give some help to the coast or other communities? And there's really three things we've been doing, starting with Southern Oregon, who saw this discussion we were just having and kind of took the issue on themselves and said, how much would it cost to get a route to Medford? Mm-hmm. It may take us 3 days to get there, but what can we stitch together between the local system, the state system, a bridge here, a bridge there? And they found for $35 million, they could provide a triage approach to everything you see on there in yellow. So that's a connection on 140 over to 97 and I-5. Now, that's not going to be a very efficient route. It's going to be very congested. It's going to be very slow, but you can get to Medford. Mm-hmm. We're replicating that same kind of thinking right now and going county by county through Western Oregon and having those same conversations. Just 10 days ago in Tillamook, we had the initial work that we've been doing with Tillamook County, and they went through the same exercise and able to find much more efficient ways and effective ways for their counties. Lane County, we're doing the same work, and eventually we're going to other counties. The other thing you see on this map are three of our maintenance sites that right now are in the tsunami zone. Our proposal would be to move those outside of the tsunami zone, and then what I call supersize those and put a whole bunch of building supplies in those, just like you're expected to have a cache of supplies in your home. Well, just think on a very big scale, our maintenance stations having a whole bunch of construction material equipment, whether it's old railroad flatbeds, whether it's culverts, whether it's extra fuel, all those things that somebody, whether it's ODOT, city, county, private contractors, are going to need to start putting things together. So then we have the supplies in the inundation zone already, and again, we can start stitching the thing back together again with priorities. So that's some of the work that we're doing, recognizing that the first slide I showed you was kind of the long-term approach. This is more of how can we get out in front of it and do some what we call triage approach.
Okay. Senator Boquist and then Senator Drudd.
Thank you. Could you go back, Representative Benz, to this one right? This phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four, is there a correlation between that and the previous slide, which has the phases on it? A billion here, a billion there. You go backwards, keep going right there. Are those
yes.
the same phases?
Yeah, those are the same phases.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Drudd.
Yeah. I'd just like to add some probability, because we're going to be playing a gambling game here. On the southern coast from Newport on down, there's a 40% chance in the next 50 years of having a quake of 8 or more. The total unzip that would impact Portland is less than 10 over the next 50 years. So that's what bothers me about this plan, I think, and that's the reason I asked for the Reedsport route, because I bet the odds, and the odds are that you're going to have a quake in the southern area is about four times more than it is in the northern part of the state. So I just wanted the committee to know the rationale.
Senator Girard, I'll comment. One of my first transportation hearings when I was a freshman in 2013 was a presentation from ODOT about seismic preparedness. And during that time, if I recall, and I think, Paul, you were there, there was nothing on the south coast at all. So it's very gratifying to at least see a yellow line over here that there's some consideration now about how we at least traverse the south coast. So we're getting better. Thank you very much.
But Madam Chair, that is the most expensive part of our system.
Understood.
And so, yeah, there's probability and there's tough trade-offs and, yeah, many different approaches.
I appreciate Senator Girard's attention.
Yeah. All right, continuing. So to kind of wind this up, we didn't reach consensus on much of anything, but I think we all agreed we needed to do something. So how much? The general discussion was between 9 and 11 cents, but we didn't reach agreement. Should any be used solely for maintenance preservation seismic, or should it be divided between maintenance preservation seismic, congestion relief, and so on? Didn't decide. The return on investment of preservation is 9-1, so preservation kind of wins in a lot of these discussions. ROI was difficult to get a number. And then should any part of that increase be bonded, and if so, what should we spend it on? And then we discussed a number of collateral issues that came up throughout the discussions. For example, the small city allotment, which has been $1 million for many, many years. I believe there's consensus it should be increased to $5 million. The counties have agreed upon an allocation of a portion of any new money, again, about $5 million to low registration counties with lots of road miles. I think we all supported that. They're the actual numbers. So we have them online. The orphan highways, we discussed in very, very general terms. We think we should do something, but of course it costs money. Regulatory modifications to reduce costs. There was some interesting discussion about transport of aggregate and how much it's adding to overall costs. I got those numbers today. It appears that on the average, each additional mile of moving aggregate for any significant project can be in the multi-millions of dollars, because about 56% of every project is going to be aggregate and material. So we should be looking at doing something there if we can. We had studies of other laws that are driving up the cost of fuel. We talked about the veto.
Representative Benz, I think Representative Smith has a question.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt. I wanted him to.
Okay.
Let me just go through and finish. The VW settlement money, there's 15% that could be available for charging light-duty cars. The flex funds of $26 million is currently going to transit. We should be discussing what happens to it. A more refined user pay system, for example, pay by mile or tolling. We talked, of course, about increased efficiencies. This led to some discussion by Paul and Victor of efficiencies already being brought into play. And I don't want to miss the fact that ODOT has been doing a lot of stuff more efficiently, and it's been saving a lot of money. I list these things here, and of course, we would want to continue that and do a better job. We talked about a workforce for addressing mega projects in excess of $500 million, and there's the end.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. That's a beautiful mosaic. Good job. I actually recognize that area. We've got reporters in the room who are going to report out today that we're talking about raising the gas tax. But we didn't discuss one item that goes along with this conversation and actually fills in the mosaic, and that's our federal partners. Was there any conversation on what the federal match is with any state dollars we may raise? Was there any discussion on how we're going to partner with our congressional partners to encourage them to match what we're trying to do? How do we get the biggest bang for the buck so when we convince Oregonians that we're raising their dollars, that they know that we've turned over every stone to get every penny that we possibly can to put into our roads?
Madam Chair, if I may, we did talk about that, and it should have been under the final issues and just was one of those many that got left out. But yes, we did talk about that at length, and it's one of the things that I'm guessing we will be talking about during the revenue meeting that's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks.
And I would add to the committee, Representative Benz has done an excellent job pointing this out. I'm a ways and means guy, and so the first thing I'm looking at is leverage. And so for the $1,087,000,000 that we put into motor fuel tax from the last biennium, we received $858 million in federal funds. And with the Trump administration touting that we're going to have additional investments in infrastructure, I really think there's an opportunity for this committee, working through ODOT and the commission, to leverage those dollars even further and get bigger bang for the buck. I have two more questions, if I can.
Please.
Madam Chair, if I may, and before President Smith asked me another question, I just want to mention, because you reminded me of the fact that when I say 11 cent gas tax, that's a gas tax equivalent. I think in our committee, most people were talking 7 cent gas tax and 3 or 4 cents of other things. whether it was registration fee increases or things of that nature. So for the reporters in the room, 11 cents would be the wrong number. It should be 11 cent equivalent, and I should have put equivalent throughout in this presentation because, again, this is one of the reasons we didn't come to an agreement regarding the amount, because we hadn't decided what the phase-in should be, and we didn't have a complete picture of all of the different things that are going to be on the table when this when the rest of the reports are made.
Yeah, and but, again, I think you've done a phenomenal job with us. I want to talk about depreciation of our roads, because your committee is responsible for preservation. And this is where I gore an ox. We've talked about the weather, we've talked about geology, we've talked about seismic activity, but I think we're ignoring one other significant partner who helps depreciate our roads, and that's quite often heavy vehicles that are traveling up and down our freeways and on our roads. And I know this causes heartburn for some of our folks, but our truckers right now are paying $608 million in weight mile taxes. At least they did in 2015-17. Is that adequate to take care of the depreciation that occurs as a result of trucks going up and down our highways?
Well, we got Mazin here.
Just frolic.
I have someone to answer that question.
And I'll just preface it as we wait for them to come up. And in order for someone to get from your district to Salem, they have to come through my district down the interstate. And quite often I'm watching interstate trucks, not our Oregon-based truckers, our interstate truckers, who are coming down our freeway wearing chains with no ice or snow on the roads, who are being pulled over for excessive weights, watching chunks of concrete come out as they're driving on the sides of the freeway rather than on the center of the freeway where they should be. And I wonder if that excessive depreciation is getting covered adequately as a result of the taxes they are paying.
Mr. Malik, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Smith. In Oregon, we do have the tradition.
Mr. Malik, we'll need your name for the record, please.
Sorry, Mazin Malik with Legislative Revenue Office.
Thank you.
That usually doesn't happen to me. So back again, Representative Smith and Madam Chair, the highway cost responsibility process of what we've been practicing for many years tries to allocate these different damages between heavy trucks and vehicles. So the interesting thing, of course, with this process that we do out of constitutional requirement is that we do it on an expenditure type of the process, not on damage, only damage. So what that means is if we have, let's say, $1.1 billion to spend, we would do it on the expenditures, and we allow that to balance based on the damage. But, of course, if we have only $1 billion to assess, then that is the amount that we look at. So there is a missing piece, but that missing piece is not in the how we allocate. It's a missing piece on how much is enough to cover all the requirements of the highway needs.
Yeah. Well, just Madam Co-Chair, just as a point of thought, I think one of the things we as a committee need to be looking at is what are the multiple reasons for depreciation, and are those areas or are those responsible for creating a portion of the depreciation? Are they making sure that they're covering their fair share? And maybe the answer is yes, they are. I don't know, but I think it's a conversation we need to have. I have just one last question, if yes, I can. Can we go back to scenario number four, where we put 50 some odd cents in, and it's all green? Right there. Was there any consideration when all is well, what that'll mean to the state's population and what that might drive in terms of growth in communities when access is available for all?
I guess as an economist, I will take that question. I think that there are some studies that I've seen. I don't know if it covers that. We could run simulations. However, I think that probably will be a good problem to have. If we have all that green, and I think the transportation system is a necessary but not a sufficient condition for economic development. So if you don't have a good transportation system that moves things around, you will not have an economic process because the economic issues will just not work. However, just having it by itself and having it at the top of the does not make you a better economy to produce. So...
Well, and I don't want to, Madam Coach, I don't want to press the issue too hard. I just came back from Los Angeles a couple days ago, a week or so ago, and I watched construction after construction occurred, and I wonder if at some point in time there's just a limit to what you're capable of doing within the population confines that you have. And as I look at that scenario, I just wonder what that would mean to population growth throughout the state of Oregon if some of those constraints were eliminated. So just a thought.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Vance, for another delightful, I've seen several of your slideshows over, and they're always entertaining. I wanted to go back to the orphan highways and wanted to just hear a little bit more about what discussions you had, et cetera. I think everyone here knows that orphan highways continue to be a cost for the state, and although we may not be putting as much money in as folks would like, they will, just wanted to hear what folks were talking about, because these are a serious burden for us, and wanted to hear a little bit more about that. And then I have one other question, please.
Madam Chair, I think it's safe to say that each orphan highway situation has its own story and its own set of angry people and a lot of self-righteous chest thumping going on. It's when we went through it, I became impatient with it, and I thought, let's go fix three of them. That's what I thought. Let's just go fix three, because these things tend never to get fixed. And so, of course, someone then pointed out that would take money and an appropriate amount of investment to get someone to accept the sudden transfer of the highway. So that stalled all our discussion out until we decide how much we're going to raise and then how much, if any, we're going to allocate to that particular problem. The reason I was taken by it is because I had just driven down 82nd and recognized what a wreck it is. I mean, yes. It does look like
yes, it does.
No one gives a hoot. And I had to drive down a long ways. I was looking for a part for my car. And I was just struck by, when someone told me it was an orphan highway, I remembered. And I thought, my goodness, let's do something about it. Now, of course, that was the easy part. Money is...
Okay, just follow up. So I'm asking, so in this recommendation that you're making, are you suggesting that any funds go towards streets such as 82nd, or are you suggesting that no funds go to the orphan highways at all?
Right. So like much of this discussion, mm-hmm. it depends ultimately on the total amount that people are thinking that the people of Oregon are willing to support. And then we can work our ways backwards and see if that particular problem rises to a level that's greater than some of the other problems we're going to see. Because we won't, as we all found out, I think the moment we got in our group, Senator Girard immediately said, well, how much money you got? And because that was the correct initial question. And that's why we fashioned a fix upon a number and worked our way out from it. But until this group decides what it's going to do, I don't think we can say if we're going to address orphan highways.
Okay. That's and then follow up, Madam Chair, please.
Yes, ma'am.
So I also wanted to hear a little bit if you had any discussions about tolling in any kind of a serious way for anywhere in the state in order to offset some of the costs of the gas tax. If there's been any real conversation about tolls for highways, for any other kind of roads at all.
No, we delegated that to Senator Boquist.
Okay.
And so I'm not joking. Clarify. We did talk about it at length, but that's where it ended up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we did talk about it. And for whatever it's worth, we've investigated tolling in my district over certain roads that people use but don't want to pay for. And so I think at some point we will institute tolling in Eastern Oregon, believe it or not. So we've done the research on tolling projects, and at some point when people get desperate enough, we'll put a toll in up to Lake Owyhee. That's the road we've been looking at. But that's another discussion for another day.
Okay.
follow up?
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to conclude with a statement, is that I understand that no one likes the orphan highways. No one here likes them. They are the, you know, literally the ugly stepchild, in this case, the orphan. And however, they are our responsibility. And it's not appropriate for those who live in those communities that have an orphan highway. And 82nd is a perfect example, even though that's not even in my district. There's also a high concentration of where poverty is, and we're trying to help folks in a variety of different ways. And for those of you who have not driven down 82nd lately, it is a challenging area, and they face a whole multitude of problems in that area. And there's many other orphan highways around the state, but they are our responsibility. And I just wanted to say that we do need to address that at some point in time. We cannot literally just walk away from such an awesome responsibility. That's my opinion. Of course, we there's all 90 of us here in the building. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Taylor. Senator Johnson.
Two things. One is, in response to the conversation about the jurisdictional transfers and orphan highways, this has been something I've worked on for a long time. And Mr. Mather was kind enough to come to my office today, and we walked through some proposals for dealing with some of those orphan highways. I tend to subscribe to the Bensian theory of, let's try a couple of them and see how they work. ODOT to local government to ODOT. There will be lessons learned from some of them, and Mr. Mather was nice enough to point out some funding mechanisms that might equalize a transfer so that one side of the equation was not accepting the complete dog. And I'm happy to share that with I was going to share it with our group, but we can get copies of the presentation for the next time we're together in plenary session. That was just a comment in response to Senator Taylor. My question was, if your presentation was not adequately depressing, and I'm glad we're on the first floor with the windows that are sealed shut, but the thing that is of concern to me is that I believe, and I would look to my chair of the work group for correction, that your folks and our folks are spending the same money. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about spending a finite amount of money, and I don't know what it is, to do maintenance and preservation, and you've painted a very dark scenario were we to not rise to that level of responsibility. We, on the other hand, have been looking at some of the choke points that cry out for enhancement if we're going to move goods and people through faster. And I don't have an answer for this, but I just want to opine on the record that I think we're both spending the same money, and that just exacerbates the conundrum that all of us are faced with trying to put together a comprehensive package. I would stand correction if I've missed the point here.
Madam Chair, if I may, so there, although I think everything's on the table, I would also suggest everything's not on the table. And so when we talk about the 50-30-20 split, for example, so what we do is we accept that, and then we go, as I did, down each follow out each of those jurisdictions and try to figure out if indeed they need that money. And do the cities really need their 20%? Do the counties really need their 30? Do the state really need its 50? And when you ask those questions, you better look for an escape route.
I was just thinking, with you sitting with your back to all of the local government,
which has begun, Representative.
I'd be thinking escape route right now.
Okay, so just so you know, that was Victor's idea. It wasn't I. 20, Victor. And maybe it was Mazin. I can't remember. But the point is, if we are going to be serious about this, we would be comparing condition, and we don't even have the same descriptive phrases for the roads in each of those jurisdictions. So it's very, very hard to say a dollar spent on fair pavement at the state level is the same as a dollar spent on fair pavement city, because they may be entirely different. So one of the things we'll be suggesting is standardization of those measures. And perhaps they are in certain of the 241 cities and certain of the 36 counties. I don't know. But if we got to a point of that ability to measure and then prioritize, perhaps we could do a better job then of allocating money to these needs. And Mazin has indicated a number of times that the difficulty in taking these big, huge numbers and attaching them to to each of these words, like preservation, $300 million. Well, there's it's much more complicated than that, as he well knows. So how we work our way through and then allocate this money is going to be imprecise. And so, having said all that, I don't know the answer to your question.
But given, given that you're the first report out, I think there is a temptation to discuss these issues in their silos, and each will affect the other rather dramatically. I'm thinking about one of the proposals about an increase in aggregate taxes. We're already talking about projects that are hundreds of millions of dollars, and you drive that number higher, we've reduced the number of projects that we can do. So there's the hydraulic among all of these that those of us on this committee must not lose track of.
There is, Senator, and I'm hopeful that people will, as we sit here tonight, realize that we have three more of these meetings to go, and that people will look at this in the entirety when the time comes as we begin to deliberate. Senator Beyer?
Oh, got to me. I wanted to get back to Representative Smith's comments about that, and I think for those who haven't spent a lot of time on transportation over the years, the cost responsibility model, which is done every 2 years, updated every 2 years, actually does reflect the real cost mm-hmm. of maintaining the system and fairly allocate it to that. There's a common, I believe, misperception that trucks cause all the damage, yeah. and that's not true. The cars are causing as much. In fact, if you look at I-5 now, people are complaining about the trucks are pretty much in the outside lane. That's not where the damage is as much. It's in the center in the other one. And it's really more the volume of cars. I mean, my experience watching that, and I think Paul attested this over the years, is we've got so much traffic now that every section of I-5 needs to be repaved about every 5 to 7 years. That's just the wear and tear is normal that happens on that. And studded tires don't help. And in the last storm, the chains didn't help a lot that people were using. That's just the reality of that system. So and I think we have a system that fairly allocates the cost, and people assume it's all trucks, but it's really not.
No, Mr. Kutcher, I would agree with you on that. I do think, though, that there needs to be a conversation on certain policies about wear and tear on roads.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we've done that. That's constitutional. We managed to put that in 99. I don't know who did that.
I mentioned it.
The other piece, I was just going to go on orphan highways. I mean, we talk a lot about that. We in my district, I think everybody's district's got a couple of these things, but we need to keep in mind that from the highway system, the perspective from the state highways is to maintain the freight and people mobility inner city. And most of these orphan highways are roads that used to have a purpose, but they don't anymore. From a state highway perspective, and it's they're really functioning now as city streets, not as highways. And I think it's how you do that. I know, and where I live, City of Springfield is in the process of negotiating transition of one right now, a portion of that, and they've bitched about it for years about whether it should go one way or the other. And I always told them, if you don't like the way it is, buy it or just accept it. ODOT would like to do nothing more than title them over to a city or a county, and it's not like it's going to happen either way. There's just not, as we've seen in those charts, they're not going to get maintained over time unless there's more money. There's just not any ability to do that.
Okay, we're going to Representative McLean, then Senator Monroe, and we'll wrap up with Representative Lively.
Well, I wanted to, the last dialogue that we just had on orphan highways again, I really like the term transfer. That we think about them not as something somebody doesn't want, but we try to figure out where they best should be positioned. And so I really appreciated Senator Johnson and Senator Beyer talking about that. But I think when we look at the transferring, that we're talking about the places where it doesn't make sense for it to be a state facility anymore, and then there are other ones that it might make a lot of sense for them to be a state facility. So that transfer of facilities, I think we need to talk about, and I think our group has started that conversation. I look forward to more of that. The other item that I thought was one of the most important elements tonight, and that was talking about siloing anything. That it's real important for us if we're really looking at efficiency and effectiveness and limited resources of any sort, and any kind of a program that basically is going to be either phased in or a combination of fees, that we're looking both at saturation points for our public, and that goes along with that communication message that I heard some of you talk about, including Representative Bentz, and then also the idea that we all have to find a piece of this particular investment. And so if we're going to find a piece of this particular investment, as we listen to these four reports coming out to us, we're going to have to really see where there's some efficiencies on being able to do something that your group wants to do and needs to do and needs to be part of that maintenance and really modernization, and also something we need to do to make sure that that modernization is really taking care of choke points that are causing that to be the most effective facility possible. But I thought it was encouraging tonight just to hear the really in-depth type of, you know, real conversations that you had that really talked about all of the challenges, but also what some of those priorities have got to be. Mm-hmm. And that was what was probably the most important to me, to listen to you talk mm-hmm. about that.
Thank you. Senator Monroe.
There's a major anomaly that kind of blows a hole in the 50-30-20, and that is unincorporated urban areas. There are massive parts of northern Clackamas County that are just as cityfied as any place else in the region, but they're not incorporated, so they don't get the 20. They only get the county portion and the state portion. Same thing is true of the Alloa area in Washington County. And I wondered if anybody was thinking about that, other than some of us land use type people that spent a long time on Metro and that understand that it really does screw up the whole system when these urban areas, heavily urban, but they refuse to form a new city, or when they try to form a new city, it doesn't work, Damascus, or they refuse to annex to a existing city. And so even though there's thousands and thousands of cars that use the roads in those unincorporated urban portions, they're not paying, they're not getting the city portion, and so the city portion is not there to maintain and preserve. And it makes an anomaly in terms of the spreading of that 50-30-20. I don't know. If anybody's got a fix to that, let me know. I would be willing to vote for a law that requires urban areas to either form a city or annex to an existing city.
That's a different discussion.
Time to go, Madam Chair. Representative Lively, please.
Thank you. I just have a few comments. First, I want to compliment Representative Bentz for making something out of our multitude of meetings. And respect to Senator Girard and Senator Winters, who I work with. Obviously, I was in many cases the odd person out. I came at this from a different direction. My constituents are different, and I look at it a little bit differently. And I just want to make a few comments about that. I'm committed with this group to find the solutions that we can agree on and go forward. Don't get me wrong when I say that. But my perception when we started this process is one of the reasons we went around the state was to listen to our stakeholders and try to understand where our stakeholders were. And one of the things I heard a lot from our stakeholders was go big, go bold, be robust. There were certain stakeholders advocating for 11 cents before we ever started that process. And that bothers me from a standpoint of what we represented to stakeholders when we went around. Many stakeholders told us they had our back in that. Now, that's not to suggest that we can do more than that. All I'm suggesting is from the standpoint of the conversation, I think the conversation has to respect some of what we heard from those people. And to do that, the question comes, so who are the customers? And the customers are all of us, all the citizens live in the state. And I believe, as an elected official, I was elected to represent the customers in my particular district, and I'm comfortable with doing that. The problem, as we found out in this community, this is overwhelming from a standpoint of how far behind we are and what the needs are. And so because of that, you pretty soon just get caught up in a spinning your head, and there's not a good answer. We couldn't possibly raise taxes enough to address. And so for me, part of the problem is, and it goes back to what Senator Johnson said about, we're all kind of talking about the same money, and the same money isn't enough to do all of these things. So then it goes back to, so what's the goal? So for me, one of the goals has to be the longer-term view. And so as we plan, and so some of what Representative Benz showed was those ratchet scenes up. So let's look at it longer term to where we can possibly get back there, because otherwise, if we don't, whatever decision we make here, we'll be going out to our constituents, our customers, and saying, we're going to raise your taxes, but your roads are going to be worse than they were before we raised them. And that's not a position that I'm ready to take. I'm still wanting to look at what the options might be. But I appreciate the work they did, and I appreciate Senator Girod and Senator Winters for the conversations we had, because I think all of us recognize this is an overwhelming, this part of it's overwhelming, let alone till we get to the rest of them. So, but I look forward to those conversations.
Thank you, Representative Lively. Any further comment? Perfect timing. I'll turn to Mr. Brennan and give us an update of what Wednesday and Monday, please.
You're done.
Clip. Any further comment, Representative?
Well, I just
Benz?
Want to
wrap up?
Give a due a note to my really great help in Ontario, Andre Dominguez, who put this together with my yelling at her repeatedly over the past 9 days. And these kind of things are one enormous amount of work, and thank goodness she's got a lot of patience.
Very good job.
So shout out to Andrea. And then as far as I give a lot of thought to spelling out in more detail some of the kind of conclusions our group reached, but I realized that my thought had been place this before you as clearly as I possibly could. I've done that. And now the conversation can continue with, I really do look forward to the rest of the presentations. But the concept here was to make it clear, everybody, as Representative Lively has pointed out, is going to have their take on it, and I really look forward to hearing what those are.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Malik, any parting comments?
Madam Chair, since you asked me to do it, I just would like to give kind of frame for some of the issues that you're looking at. Remember that it seems like we haven't done all the work that needs to be done in estimating beforehand when we're doing this very, very quickly. I think there's probably, as Representative Smith asked about the federal funding and how it comes, and what is the state fund and how all these, I think the options are here. I mean, this is not necessarily alternative realities. It's alternative, or you know, alternative facts. There are options. I think we need, and we could look at different options of how these holes would be plugged. My suspicion is the amounts that you've seen and that Representative Benz was able to get from ODOT and from the programs are probably at the ceiling of where things could be. There might be slightly rosier pictures at different times. So
you're just trying to cheer us up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Malik. Mr. Brennan.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So Wednesday, 6 o'clock p.m., we'll be back here. We'll be receiving reports from the Public Transportation and Public Safety Work Group, which is Senator Byers' work group, and then we'll also receive a report from the Multimodal Freight Work Group, which is your work group. Monday, the 27th, that's the time when the Congestion Relief Work Group with Senator Boquist will be reporting. Also at 6 o'clock, Madam Chair.
And is the accountability work group meeting again on Wednesday as well?
Yeah, 5 to 6, Madam Chair.
5 to 6. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Yeah, on that note, we're adjourned. Thank you all. All right. Yeah, on that note, we're adjourned. Thank you all.